Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome, big welcome to this Resolve Conference on Sustainable Lives. My name is Tim Jackson. I am director of Resolve, the research group on lifestyles, values and environment, and it is fantastic to see so many people here. In fact, to be honest, if I knew it was going to be this popular, we probably would have charged you for it. No, that was we know that money isn't everything. You're very welcome. It's going to be a fantastic day. It's going to be a rather challenging day, both in terms of people management, but also hopefully intellectually as well. Before we start, a few housekeeping points. Refreshments you will already see, they're in the Crown Room next door. They will continue to be in the Crown Room, but you're welcome to move around with those refreshments if you so desire. So there's a bit more space to eat and enjoy and take time out and everything. Breakout rooms. One parallel session will stay in here. I'll come back to this later. And then the Oxford room is through the Crown Room, just off to the right. And the other room that we have, the Coronet room, is down through the Crown Room and then down some steps and off to the left. And there'll be people to point you in the right direction, hopefully at the right times. Toilets, there's one ladies' toilet on this floor. At least we've got our priorities right in terms of gender. The gents are one floor down, and there's plenty of toilets everywhere if you go right down to the foyer. But don't stay too long, because it is a gorgeous day outside, and we want you back in the dark, in hard intellectual effort for at least some of the day. Fire exits, two at the back and one at the side there. That should be fairly obvious. There is no planned fire alarm, so if the alarm goes off, as they say, it is for real. And that seems like a nice segue, of course, into the alarms and excursions around climate change, at least. And some of those alarms are perhaps going off, others are not so obviously going off, and it leads, of course, to something that's been dubbed with a hint of self-deprecation as Giddens' paradox, the fact that by the time the alarms are really going off, it's probably too late to do anything about it. And we have the man himself to talk to us about that in just a moment. I just want to give you a sketch of what the day is about, how it's going to be framed, and what we would like, and I hope you would like, to get from it. So here we are. We're on the road to Copenhagen, as it's been dubbed. The long and winding road, the airport runway, the long and tangled path, whatever you like to conceive it. Copenhagen in December is one of those key turning points, it seems, in climate policy, in which it may or may not be make or break. The idea of getting an international consensus around limiting climate change past the Kyoto Protocol, of course, is incredibly important. But irrespective of that, actually, the UK already has an extraordinarily ambitious climate target through the Climate Change Act, 80% by 2050, 34% by 2020 cuts in carbon emissions, and 42% if Copenhagen works. 42% cut in carbon emissions within about a decade is an extraordinary target. How it ended up being there is anyone's guess, but there it is. It's in the legislation, and somehow now the UK government, for better or worse, has to figure out how to deliver it, and probably for better, given what we know about the impacts of climate change. So I think the point, the framing point, and it's a very, very simple one, is it's fanciful to suppose that such deep cuts in carbon emissions, which are heavily dependent on energy, which is the motor that drives economic activity, and indeed activity of any kind, that can be achieved without some impact on people's lives, whether that's directly in terms of the availability of those resources, whether it's through the institutions that have to be set in place to structure and meet those targets, whether through it's the economy as a whole and the way that operates, whether it's through the prices they're subjected to, it is about people's lives. And that territory, that impact on people's lives, is broadly the territory that Resolve set out to look at 3 years ago. We're just about in the midterm now, and this conference, this event, is a part of our journey through that five-year exploration of lifestyles, values, and environment. It's fanciful to suppose that there will be no impact. The question is, what do we need to know about that? How will people respond to these targets? What is possible in terms of changing people's lifestyles and behaviours? What is the impact of the new institutions? How does the economy work? And perhaps even more importantly, what do we know from academic research about people's lives, about the psychology of their behaviours, about the sociology of lifestyles, about the way that they respond to economic price signals, about the importance of price and income versus the importance of fashion, trend, and those other non-economic factors, as our economists like to call them, that clearly constitute the way that our lives are constructed. What can we say about those things that will inform policy? That really is the first part of today, is to convene some of that research. A lot of it self-declaredly comes from what we've been doing in Resolve over the last couple of years, but we've also been very pleased to draw in other people researching in this area, and there's an increasing number of them. And we hope the morning sessions, therefore, what they give you is a taste of this kind of research, of the kind of learning that's coming out of it. That's fantastic. It is a very, very fertile place to be doing academic research because there's so much interesting stuff going on. But as everybody knows, that's not quite the point. At least it's not quite the point of trying to achieve climate change targets in the climate that we're in. So the second part of the day is essentially to ask the question, how do we take the learning from that academic work and ensure that the policies that we develop in the road to Copenhagen, in the run-up to the climate change targets, in less than a decade, really, how do we translate that enormous body of research, that incredibly important body of research, into something that will create useful policy to meet those targets? That is the challenge. In the afternoon, we'll address that in three very specific ways. The first one is to draw out one of the tensions in that debate, and it's a tension that I hear over and over again in policy environments. Is this about moral restraint, or is it about a better kind of life? What can we offer to people in the attempt to get them to lead more sustainable lives? Can we say, here are the sunny uplands of sustainability, just walk your way towards them and we will come into this wonderful paradise? Or do we actually at this point have much fewer options and we should be looking at the moral basis for our actions and the restraint that's needed in order to achieve those targets? So that tension between a moral debate and an alternative hedonism is part one of this afternoon's session. And then the second part of the session is a kind of question time debate. We've got a panel of a mixture of people, journalists, policymakers and academics. And if you look in page two of your little handout here, you'll see page two is a panel question form. I'm told this is easy to do. I'm just going to test this. What we'd like to do is tease some questions out before we go into it. So if you could, through the morning, just note down anything that you think, here is a question that these guys are never going to be able to answer. Just write it down with your name at the top. Tear it out. It does work. Look, it does work. And hand it in to us at the reception desk before the beginning of lunchtime, if you would. And we will select some of those for this afternoon's session. We'll keep the rest as ammunition for policymakers in the future. And then finally, almost to round off the day, I'm very pleased to say that we've got Angela Eagle coming. She was invited, actually, in her capacity as Exchequer Secretary to the Treasury, where she has responsibility for climate change. And this bringing together of climate change responsibility with economic responsibility is, again, a key theme of the situation that we're in. If we're stuffed in terms of climate change, it may not have escaped your attention that we're also, to some extent, stuffed in terms of the economy. We have an economy which, at this point in time, is, if not fundamentally broken, at least just toddling over the edge of an extraordinary crisis. It is extraordinary times to be engaging in this debate. So that's the shape of the day. At the end of it, we will ask you, we'd love you to stay for some drinks in the Crown Room. But to kick it all off, I would very much like to welcome Tony Giddens, who probably needs no introduction to many of you. He is Lord Sir Anthony Professor Dr. Hare Tony Giddens, and apparently the most widely cited sociologist in the universe, and certainly, interestingly, not just by sociologists. I mean, I happen to think that modernity and self-identity, for example, is one of those classic psychology texts. Yes, I know he's a sociologist, but that crossing of disciplines that somehow has characterized his career and has been the basis for what he's achieved is to some extent a mirror of what we're trying to achieve in Resolve. So it's a great pleasure, really, to welcome Tony and to ask him to say something about his new book, The Politics of Climate Change.